Tonight is anniversary night. The format of tonight's meeting will be a main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by our information break and the anniversary celebrants. Our main speaker tonight is Peretz.
Hello, everyone. My name is Peretz, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 30th of 2003. This is my home group. I have a sponsor. His name is Brent, and I am working the steps, I'm grateful to be here. If I would tell you that this is not a big deal, I would be lying. I walked into this group about 13 years ago, and I've been thinking about it ever since. And Todd, you know, like I got 10 years in November, and I was like, this is it. This is going to be my year. They're going to ask me to speak, right? I'm going to help so many people. People are going to line up afterwards, not just to thank me, but also to ask me to sponsor them. And a few months ago, Todd came over to me before the Monday night meeting, and he said, oh, I want to speak to you after the meeting. And I said, oh, of course, yeah. And I run over to Bob, and I go, Bob, this is it. This is it. He's going to ask me. I spent the whole meeting thinking about what I was going to talk about that night, here. Needless to say, I run over to him after the meeting, and he says to me, I'm like, hey, you want to talk to me about something? And he says, yeah, I just wanted to say, hey, it's nice to see you here. I was like... So consider yourself officially off my resentment list. Thank you. Like I said, I'm an alcoholic, and... What that means is not just that thinking part, but I react differently to alcohol than my fellows, right? I have a body and mental disease. I have a body that once I put alcohol into my system, I don't know what's going to happen. All bets are off. And then I have a mind that can't leave it alone. I obsess about it, right? I have a mind that tells me, even though my history shows me that I can't drink safely, and I have one drink, I continue to put alcohol into me and hoping that this time somehow, some way, that it will be different, right? And it was always about, like, maybe just changing the outside stuff, right? If I don't hang out with that guy, I'll be okay. If I don't drink this drink, I'll be okay, right? If I go home by a certain time, I'll be all right. But without fail, it always ended up the same. My relationship to alcohol was always strange, right? The first time I got drunk was at 13. It wasn't Manischewitz. It was Kedem and the other Jewish wine. And I blacked out. I blacked out that night. There were consequences of my friends were hanging out. We left one of the guys on the boardwalk in Brighton Beach, and he got mugged. But I had a good time, from 13 to 18, I would drink in spurts. You know, I was thinking about it the other day. There was times where I drank for like 2 weeks straight, and then stopped, or you know, drank around the holidays. But each time, you know, I got drunk, and I got so sick the next day, I would usually swear off alcohol. I'm not going to do that again. Before I started drinking on a regular basis at 18, you know, basically, you know, my childhood up until 18, I always felt different. I always felt not a part of. There was always, you know, lying, cheating, and stealing were my tools when I was a kid, and drinking allowed me to forget about that stuff, right? Because I felt bad about doing everything, all the things that I would do, and drinking would quiet those voices. I was in therapy from a very young age. Arrested for shoplifting at 16, you know, the list goes on and on. Kicked out of school, sleepaway camps, you name it, I've been asked to leave it. And, except the bars. And so the last school that asked me to leave was when I went to Israel to study abroad for the year after high school. And they had some rule. They had a rule about going to classes, and I didn't really like that rule. And the rabbi, he was this big broody guy who smoked cigarettes and chewed gum at the same time. No offense to anyone who does that. And he came over to me and he was like, "Scheinerman, am I going to see you at services tomorrow morning?" And I was like, "Sure." And I was with my friend, and we were like, "Sure." And he comes to wake me up the following morning, and he it was around, I don't know, it was 11:30 or something like that, and he kicks my bed, and I wake up, and he's like, "Why weren't you there?" And I look at the clock, and I do my best acting job, and I'm like, "Oh, I overslept, you know." And he's like, "I got some good news and some bad news for you. What do you want to hear first?" And I go, "The bad." He's like, "You're out of here." And I go, "The good?" He goes, "Your friend Shlomo is going with you." So I didn't care, right? I didn't care, and I was going to show him. He actually asked me. He actually asked me a couple days later, before I left, to stay, and I was like, and I was so resentful at him. I was like, "I'm going to show you. I'm leaving." I came back. I came back home to Brooklyn, where I grew up, and. I was directionless. I had no clue. I had no clue where I was going. I didn't know what to do. And for the first time, I was up with my friend's attic, where all good things happen. And there's like graffiti on the wall and stuff. And we're drinking. And for that night, for some reason, it just all clicked. Right? And from 18 to 25, when I first entered the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't draw a sober breath. And like the book talks about, gradually things got worse, right? I would always, from the beginning, I would drink by myself, right? And I was in denial about my drinking, but I just didn't want anyone to bother me, you know? I just wanted to be left alone. Leave me alone. Don't question me. I'll figure it out. I got this. Don't worry about it. And that attitude, it got me here. You know, my drinking progressed to, you know, from going out and having fun on a Thursday night, right? And, you know, my friends from Brooklyn would pick me up in their, you know, fancy Lincoln Town car, and we would go to the Upper West Side. Now, I come from a sheltered community in Borough Park, Brooklyn, and from an Orthodox Jewish home. I thought the Upper West Side was cool, actually, at one point. Little did I know. We would go to Bourbon Street on a Thursday night, and it was packed, and that's, you know, drinking was fun back then, right? But drinking would, you know, I would always be the last one out. You know, my friends called me. I had no idea what an alcoholic was, right? No idea, right? It was something that I can, you know, I see celebrities on television, they go to rehab, and that was for them. But in where I grew up, my parents didn't have alcohol in their house. I didn't know any alcoholics. I wasn't schooled on alcoholism. And, you know, my friends would be like, "Yeah, man, you're an alcoholic." I'll be, "Yeah," right? And my drinking progressed from you know, going out and having a good time to drinking by myself, right? And over the years, you know, my world just kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. I couldn't return a phone call from a friend who was concerned about me, who haven't heard from me in a while. I couldn't show up for my family. I was drinking around the clock towards the end. I was drunk driving. And I had a couple of moments, you know, before I got sober that scared me, right? That said something to me that, like, this might be a problem, you know? And I used to work in catering, and I did a job upstate for an Orthodox Jewish middle school. And at night, before we set up for the following day, I found out the bar was closing in 20 minutes, and I told everyone to stop what they were doing. Let's go to the bar. And, you know, when I first came into AA, I couldn't really identify with people who said, you know, I had one and then I went into a blackout. Or, you know, I had 30 and it wasn't enough, or I didn't even get drunk. And then I remembered that night I only had a couple, right? And the next thing I know, the cops were trying to wake me up in my room, in my hotel room. What happened was, in my blackout, I confused the door that led to the hallway for the door that led to the bathroom, and proceeded to use that hallway as a bathroom while Orthodox Jewish girls were running by and screaming. So I knew something was wrong, right? It was sort of funny, which it is now, right? But at the time, I was like, And you know, I'm so grateful that with all the drunk driving that I did, and even though I lived in Manhattan, I had a car and I just zipping around and come to in blackouts, and I'm on the Long Island Expressway, come to in blackouts. I'm with my ex-wife's family, driving them around, and I never harmed anyone. I never harmed anyone. I never harmed myself, and I'm grateful for that. What happened? I ran into a friend of mine. I ran into a friend of mine who was sober. And even though I just told you I had no idea what alcoholism or alcoholics were, this friend actually, I put this really far in the back of my mind. I actually went to visit him in rehab, but I had no idea what it was. And he asked me to bring him pot and condoms, and I did. Because I'm a good friend. And I was like, well, you should have a good time there too, right? And it's the same friend, years later, that I met at a party. And I showed up late, of course, because that's all I knew how to do, if I showed up at all. And like it says in Bill's story, when Bill's looking at Abby, like something was different about him. Something had changed, right? And he told me that he had gotten sober and he's in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And I was like, so you don't drink on Wednesdays? Like, what's the deal there, you know? And he's like, no. He's like, I'm sober. I don't drink. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. But, you know, he told me about his story. And for the first time, I identified with someone, right? Here was a guy who I thought I can always look at. He was more screwed up than me, right? I don't have a problem. This guy has a problem. And I identified with him. And I was like, for the first time, you know, I'm 25 at the time, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm all alone in this world. You know, I'm all alone. I don't think like other people. I don't act like other people. But, you know, here he was telling me his story, and I identified with him. And I was like, oh, wow. Oh, okay. You get it, right? And then he listened to me blame everyone else in my world for my problems. And he would listen to me. He was like, okay, great. He's like, well, let's go to a meeting. Blah, 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 blah. You didn't listen to a word I was saying. You know, my ex-wife is the problem, her in-laws, the sanitation department, they're the problem, right? I'm not the problem. But he planted a seed. And a couple months later, I ended up checking myself into rehab. And there, I thought I was going to take care of my drug problem, right? And little did I know, like I said, anything about alcoholism, and we're in group, and we're talking about alcoholism, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks, and it was just like, oh God, oh God, you know, like I'm an alcoholic, right? And the thought of never drinking again was so crippling, right? So crippling. How can you take away the one tool I had? The one tool I had on how to and how to deal with this life. And, you know, I went to the 79th Street workshop for the first meeting, and it was a Monday, and at 4 p.m., and I told my first lie in Alcoholics Anonymous. I raised my hand, and so my name is Peretz, right? It's spelled P-E-R-E-T-Z. A lot of people think I'm saying Paris. A lot of people want to pronounce it Peretz. It's Peretz, right? Now, it's difficult as it is walking around with that name and doing that. So when I was out in the bars, I would try to simplify things and just go by Phil. And it was easy to remember. P. Unless I was drinking around Parrot Square downtown, then I would used to tell people that my grandfather named it after me or something. So when I came into AA, I was like, hey, my name is Phil. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I just got out of rehab. I got 8 days. Another lie. You know, I was swapping meds in rehab. And then it dawned on me after a couple weeks of doing that I might want to start telling people my real name. Because I think I'm going to stick around here for a little while. I didn't take any of the suggestions when I first came here, right? I looked at the steps and I just said, no way. No way. Now, the word God, you know, had me shuddering, right? I thought my conception of God up until that point was, if anyone's seen Ten Commandments, right, on television, right? You have Charlton Heston and the white coat and the white beard and the stick, and that was my conception of God. My conception of God was so off. That's Moses in the movie. That's not even God. But that was it, right? It wasn't a loving God. It was a you better or else God. And I was always in fear of that, right? And my prayer, we're coming around on the Day of Atonement soon. I had this one prayer. I would show up, Orthodox Jewish synagogue, so I'm there all day. And I had one prayer. I would start off and be like, God, don't kill me. I'm going to really try better next year. That was it. That's all I had. And then the next 7 hours, I'd just be counting down the pages. So I saw the word God in the steps, and I didn't want to have anything to do with it. I saw amends. I definitely didn't want any part of that. And I paid the price. I for so long I was dry in this program, but initially, people kept telling me to get a sponsor, and I took the first guy who was willing to, you know, sponsor me, and it was just literally a name only, I didn't work the steps, but I'd spent 3 years in AA relapsing, I couldn't get behind, you know, the one day at a time concept, right? I'm always thinking about tomorrow. I'm always thinking about next year, right? I was 25 at the time, right? For some reason, I kept thinking, man, I'm like, how am I supposed to stay sober until I'm 75, right? 50 years? That's insane. You know, I can barely commit to a monthly Metro card, let alone, you know, stay sober for 50 years. And, you know, I was just like, okay, well, if I can't, then I might as well drink. And I did. And that would go on for a few years. And I finally, after my last relapse, I called my sponsor, and I wanted to wish him well. And I called him to thank him for everything he did for me. And he said at the end of the phone conversation, he was like, you know what? He's like, I'll meet you at the Sunday night meeting. I said, okay, dude, whatever. And I hung up the phone, and I had one of those moments, right? One of those God moments where I was just like, what? What am I doing, right? What am I doing? And it was really painful to be in Alcoholics Anonymous, relapsing, knowing that I have, the tools are here for me, but yet I keep thinking that this just isn't going to work for me. And And then on November 30th, you know, November 29th was my last drink. And November 30th was my first day sober at the Sunday night meeting. And I actually got called up. The topic was primary purpose, and I get up there, and I'm like, I don't remember my primary purpose. I drank last night. Yeah, you remember that, Peggy, right? And you know, that would continue. You know, I got the first part of the first step, right? I'm powerless over alcohol, right? It can no longer be my solution to my problems, right? And then I'd spent seven and a half years trying to figure out the second half of the first step. And stayed, you know, my life is unmanageable, right? I couldn't get honest with doing an inventory. I was so afraid of what you're going to think of me, so afraid that I couldn't get honest, and I would pay the price, and the people around me would pay the price. In that time until, you know, it's till 7.5-8 years sober, you know, I was dry. You know, I was working steps 1 and steps 12, right? I was doing a great job of not drinking, got that down pat, and I was doing a good job of sponsoring guys, right? And I had like 10 sponsees at one point, and I don't even know what I was telling them or doing with them, but, you know, I was doing the best I could. Anyways, and then yet after another emotional bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, really causing a lot of pain to the people that were in my life, and I finally hit this bottom where I was like, something has to change. You know, I can't keep doing this, you know, my way, right? And like I like to tell sponsees, you know, your way and your attitude about this of like take it or leave it, and maybe I'll do this and maybe I'll do that. It's not going to work here, right? And I did a good job of not drinking, but I definitely wasn't living. And I hit another bottom, and I decided to throw myself back into Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because it got to the point where, like, I wasn't thinking about drinking. That wasn't an option. But jumping in front of a train was, right? And I knew that, like, what had to be done. And I switched sponsors. I started to go through the steps again. You know, that sponsor treated me like I had one day, and he was yelling at me on the phone, and you know, 90 and 90, and you know, going up to the celebrants and going up and noticing people who are counting days and go over to them and get phone numbers and calling 3 alcoholics a day and saying prayers in the morning, and it changed my life, right? And for the first time, I got honest, right? I did an honest inventory, right? These secrets that I held on to for my whole life, you know, that I thought were going to be the biggest deal, especially when this guy hears it. This guy's cleaning his kitchen counter as I'm talking about it and not even, like, paying that much attention. And I'm like, he's like, okay, next. I'm like, did you hear what I just said? And he was like, yeah, next. I'm like, okay. So I did, you know, I did an honest inventory, and, you know, and that weight was lifted off my shoulder, right? And I could start to look people in the eye again. And then that continued by doing the amends, right? Of going back to people who I had harmed and making an honest amends to them and telling them I am sorry, you know, because like my sponsor told me, my former sponsor, he's like, you're not that guy on your fourth step anymore, you know, and that's I don't want to be that guy anymore. I don't want to be that guy anymore. I never want to go back to that way that I was acting. I never want to go back to drinking, right? That's why I take this very, very, very seriously, right? If you're my friend, you know I'm a clown, but when it comes to this stuff, I take this stuff very seriously. And especially, you know, like last November, there were 3 people behind me in this group, this large group. There were 3 people behind me celebrating. You know, 10, I had 10, 15, 18, 25. You know, that line keeps getting shorter behind me. And I want to stay, right? I want to stay. To the newcomer, you know, this works. It really, really works. All you have to do is, all I had to do was get honest, keep an open mind, you know, and keep that willingness, you know, and get a sponsor, right? My sponsor today is what I like to call a voice of reason, right? When I got stuff going up in my head, I can call him with inventory, and he can, you know, he can filter all that stuff. So I just want to say I'm very grateful to be here. I'm grateful this is anniversary night. This is also another beautiful part of this program, is that we get to see families celebrate with their kids, like that watch the other night, Saturday night. That was something special to be a part of. And to the, you know, to the families here and to friends, is like, you know, your loved ones are in a good place. Thank you very much.